This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Winning has a price. And leadership has a price. So I pulled people along when they didn't want to be pulled. I challenge people when they don't want to be challenged. And I earned that right because my teammates came after me. They didn't endure all the things that I endured. If you join the team, you live at a certain standard that I played the game. And I wasn't going to take any less. Now, that means I had to go in there and get in your ass a little bit, and I did that. You ask all my teammates, one thing about Michael Jordan was he never asked me to do something that he didn't do. When people see this, they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never won anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. Like, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lee Chui Lin calling in from home. We have Arvind Yuvaraj in the studio, and we have Sharmila Ganesan also at home, just our usual separated arrangement. And as you might have guessed, today we are actually going to be talking about a series that has been released at 2 episodes per week and now is done. It's available on Netflix, and it is The Last Dance, and for that, we are welcoming basketball fan and friend of the show, Shan, to talk about this. Hello, Shan.
Hello. Thanks for inviting
me. Hi.
Very thrilled to be speaking about my idol, I guess, more or less. Yeah.
That's a good start because The Last Dance tells the story, of course, of the Chicago Bulls in the 90s and their three-peats, right? The times that they won the championship thrice in a row and the two times that they did that. And really the man who seemed to be, you know, the engine, the one who powered them through those victories. And that is, of course, Michael Jordan.
Yeah, and I think the fact that Sean started this off by saying his idol was a great opening, because I think if you weren't a fan, if he wasn't your idol before you watched this documentary, and if you came out of it with him not being your idol, you possibly really hate Michael Jordan, or you weren't watching the same show, because that, like, the function of this program is really to build on that mythology of who Michael Jordan was. And I think the fact that it came up now, nearly 20 years after that first, after he left the Bulls, the time is ripe for a whole new generation of people to understand the way we understood, say, Muhammad Ali, why he became such a myth. And I think that's what makes the show so great.
You know, just thinking about, for me, the timing of this docuseries, like the you know, when they chose to put it out, is so, so perfect, because it was supposed to come out in June, but then ESPN decided to bump it up to April because of the pandemic and because people were in quarantine. But, you know, just that's like marketing goal. You can't, like, make this stuff up. The fact that the world is lacking live sports and people aren't able to go out and have those communal experiences and sit with other people and enjoy their favorite sporting events. Like, what better way to put out a docuseries about arguably the biggest or the greatest athlete in the world during a time when, you know, during a time that was so special and so iconic for people who were fans of basketball, which was the Bulls 97-98 season. So, you know, for as far as ESPN is concerned, I think that's just, you know, perfection on their part.
And I think that leads me to a question that I had for Sean specifically, because I watched this as someone who peripherally knew of the Bulls, right? Very peripherally. My introduction to Michael Jordan is through Space Jam. And so that's really how I knew that he was.
Yeah.
I agree. Thank you. And that's how I knew he was a star. But I didn't know of his athleticism and greatness, I guess. I knew of his greatness more as a concept than as a reality. So watching this documentary really brought it home for me. And it was very fresh and new, even though I know that for other people, it's really soaked in nostalgia because it's something that already passed and you're familiar with the seasons. So what was it like watching for you? I mean, was it a documentary that you'd been waiting for? Were you like really excited?
No, actually, I had no idea this documentary. I mean, I've watched several other documentaries on the Bulls, especially their second three-peat, the 96, 97, and 98, but I had no idea this was coming up. So I thought it would be just like a one-off episode. And lo and behold, it was a 10-part series. So I was very excited in the beginning to actually want to go through the whole series and all. But so I actually started, I was introduced to Michael Jordan in the early 94-ish. There was lack of content during that period in time. The Astro, I think just came into being. So, and they had ESPN on it. And if they did show, I mean, it was all basically football, but on the rare occasion, they did show basketball games, NBA games. It would most definitely be the Bulls playing. And it would be, and you'd catch other teams too, only if they were playing the Bulls. Mm-hmm. I guess because of the sheer amount of coverage you got, he was a very good product for the NBA. So everybody would just follow him. General, he made a lot of money for people because of that. Yeah, not because he was the best, but because he got the most coverage. Might be a bit controversial what I just said, but as you mature and you start looking at the game from a different perspective, you realize that things are not always what they seem in team sports.
I think that's really interesting that you bring that up, Sean, because one of the things that I constantly thought about when I was watching the show was how Jordan and the Bulls, their popularity and their fame and their prowess happened in that in-between phase where, tabloid journalism was a big thing. There's a lot of newspapers, there's a lot of this intense paparazzi coverage, celebrity culture was a big thing, but we didn't have social media. We didn't have that huge internet, presence. And so there was still a lot of mystique attached to these guys. And so now watching this footage that was filmed back in the, this huge amount of footage that was filmed back in the 90s. So I think that, and that's a very 90s nostalgic thing about this show. And I think that builds into that idea of creating an icon as well.
I think every time it steers away from the central story of Michael Jordan and what he contributed to branch off into, say, Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen, Steve Kerr, it actually becomes a very rich and engrossing documentary. But it always seems as if no matter what happens, all roads lead back to Jordan. And I'm not complaining because I think he was such a compelling figure for the documentary. I don't know anything about basketball. So as far as I'm concerned, if he says he's the best, everyone says he's the best, then he's the best. But I appreciated the mythology creation, the fact that there was this whole thing about the simple fact that you did not just said that he wasn't the best means that he might now come and hunt you down in your home and dunk on you just to prove a point.
I was going to say that actually comes across really well. And despite feedback from other people featured in the show that the show very much seems to be what Jordan wants himself presented to be, I don't think he came off of this docuseries looking like the nicest person. He looks like a star, but he also looks like a star who has no compulsions, beating people down on the way to his stardom. And I think that's to the show's credit that it doesn't try and paint him into this, like, he was so amazing, but he was also this amazing guy. No, he was flawed, and you can see that in the show. Yeah.
Do you guys think that was done on purpose because of the drama that they wanted to add to the docuseries? Because I was wondering, you mentioned three-peat, and this was the last time or the last dance, and their last shot at winning, right? As this structure and as this team. But what if they focused on the previous wins or the previous championships? Would it have been as good, or would there have been enough to talk about on a show? It comes back to the mythology building for Michael Jordan himself.
Yeah, I believe the 96 team, Chicago Bulls of the 96, was the best team on planet Earth. Like no other team, whether you had a national team, could actually beat them. They were really that good. And you could actually have a whole documentary. I have watched whole documentaries just on the 96 team. They call them the Red Army. You basically could not beat them. Phenomenal team. And that's the team where, it added to his myth. And he was just one of many players. I know it doesn't seem like that in the documentary, but there were times that he was not hot. And him being Michael Jordan and stubborn, he would just keep shooting his way and trying to get back into the game. And the other players would actually pick up the slack. And they are not mentioned in the documentary. I'm just going to have to say it because I'm going to say it anyway and it's just been bugging me. Tony Kukoc could have been a bigger part of the whole story simply because the sixth ring belonged to him. And I know it irks Jordan so badly, and that's why he completely eliminated him from the storyline. He put Steve Kerr there. I watched that game. I hated Reggie Miller's guts. I just hated him. So at the start of the game, I actually went to the toilet and I puked because I was that nervous. And the whole game was a horrendous experience because you didn't want to burst that bubble. You know, the myth had been so perfect up to that point. And thank God Kukoc stepped up. And he always delivers. You didn't know that, right? He always delivers. He's more clutch than Michael Jordan. But part of the Michael Jordan myth is that he's the most clutch person ever to play the game. It's not true. Tony Kukoc is the most clutch player ever to play the game. Yeah, I said it.
Okay, at this point, I'm going to cut in because we do have to take a break. And it feels good to end on a controversial note because we can come back and explore that. So you are listening today to Popcorn Culture, albeit a very, very sports NBA heavy episode because we are talking about The Last Dance, which was a 10-part docuseries released about the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan. Have you seen The Last Dance? You know, what was that like for you? Did you enjoy the documentary? Are you a Michael Jordan fan? Let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. Today we are joined by Shan, who is our resident NBA guy, because we're talking about The Last Dance, Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls. And so, Shan, when I asked you to be a part of the show, you specifically said you were going to come in and defend Tony Kukoc, which you then did in a really spirited way.
I hope
way.
I did him justice.
So that's the thing, right? I did want to pick up on that idea. How did you guys feel about the way that different players were represented within the docuseries? Because we've talked about this. As far as a myth-building thing for Michael Jordan goes, it's incredibly romantic, right? It's like the super talented player, the guy who's going against management, the guy who's like carrying the team. But how did you think the other players did? Shan, we'll come to you last because I think your opinions are going to be the strongest.
I got to say that I actually, you know, other than the Jordan mythos, my second favorite thing about the show was actually its treatment of Dennis Rodman, right? Because he's one of those unlikable or generally painted as the bad boy of the sport. And he was and all of that. But the show also pays him a lot of respect. It shows you the person that he is. It shows you where he came from. And similarly, we get a lot of insight into Scottie Pippen. And I'm not as close to being a basketball fan as Sean is, but I was very much a 90s kid. And these are all names that were always up there when you're growing up in the 90s. You didn't know many other people, but you knew Scottie Pippen, you knew Dennis Rodman, you knew Jordan. But it's also very clear that Jordan, for instance, doesn't like Tony Kukoc, right? So the show doesn't give you a Tony Kukoc story. Even though, I mean, he's a guy who grew up in Eastern Europe at the time when, you know, countries were splitting up. I'm sure he had a story. He didn't get one. But Steve Kerr does. And, it's, you know, all of these guys have great stories. So clearly, Sean's not too far off when it says that Jordan was running the show in terms of what we got to see and who got those stories. I must say, though, I liked that other people did get stories and not just Michael Jordan.
So it's weird, right, the show, because it sort of gives everyone a story. Like you said, everyone that Michael Jordan wants to have a story gets a story. But there's also a very strict hierarchy that the show establishes. And Michael Jordan's always on the forefront and he's always front and center. But then credit is given to the people around him who do the grunt work or quote-unquote the dirty work. You know, I was also curious to know from someone like Sean, like how much of this was hype and clever advertising and mythology building? Because Michael Jordan's company is listed as a partner on the show, like Jump 23 is a partner on the show, so he has to greenlight everything.
It's just a continuation of 98 and the brand building, and the reason they brought in the other players is so it doesn't look that blatant. That's what I think sometimes when I just keep all the whole series. Because honestly, he did live. I mean, like, Scottie Pippen was as good as him. I mean, if you don't have to know much about the game. You just have to watch a bit of it to know that Scottie Pippen was a major, major part of this whole Michael Jordan myth-building project. It seemed to me like it's a bit blatant in terms of perpetuating his brand now. It is completely unnecessary. He is a billionaire. Last I checked, he's worth $2.2 billion. They could have told a very real story, he is still the greatest player, regardless of how I sound right now.
You know? You are ruining my post docuseries buzz, because I came off of this show being all like, oh my god, I'm so emotional and I love this like arc that they've started with this series, and now I'm all like,
they did a good job on you as they did on all of us. He is still my idol. There's no other player in the history of the game which can play both ends of the court. It takes a tremendous amount of athletic ability, a lot of hatred and vindictiveness to actually, because that's the only thing which should get you going. It's a very exhausting game. Yeah, he's still the all-time best.
So for me, watching this outside of I love sports movies. I love them. I love an underdog story, which this was not. But I do love watching victories. I appreciate the thinking that goes behind it. I love the strategy. I just love sports. And so for that reason, I really enjoyed The Last Dance. But what I did not expect, and I found that it was actually kind of a slow burn. In the first two episodes, I turned to my partner who loves basketball, and so who knew this stuff inside out. And I was like, Michael Jordan seems surprisingly zen. And I think it's actually in the later episodes, as they ramp up the feuds, whether it's with Jerry Krause, whether it's with other players on the court, whether it's with his team, that's when you start to see a little bit more of that ferocity and that rage. For me, when I watched this, I wasn't thinking actually about his greatness in terms of technical skill. What I ended up thinking about was the greatness of his story. And in that sense, you know, I'm happy to be marketed to. I thought that it was a good story, well told.
No, I agree with Lynn. I think coming at it from a person who maybe isn't invested in terms of who won or who's playing who, but rather what these people are about. His story is not a regular story. He's not somebody that you would have thought would end up playing basketball, for instance, because he wanted to play baseball. And then the tragedies that happen in his personal life. I mean, it makes very compelling storytelling. And I agree, I love sports film as well. And that's where I'm coming from. I think that as a in that sports film mold, this is a series that does very well in terms of what it's setting out to do. The truthiness of it, I think, might be the thing that more people might want to debate on.
I think that's also because they sort of left the magic of the sport intact. Like normally when you watch sports documentaries, I think, the researchers or the journalists or the documentarians, they feel like they have a responsibility to deconstruct the sport. You know, it makes the show lose out on the magic of sports, because they want to tell you about the politics or the dynasties or the empires or the people who are involved or the, you know, whatever scandals going on in the sport, but they lose out on the core of the show, which is the sport itself. And that's why it feels like a sports film. But it is also refreshing, because normally you wouldn't get prestige shows like this that focus so much on the simplicity of the game.
No, I completely agree with that. And it was a very entertaining documentary, and there are several things which I didn't know about. For instance, Scottie Pippen being completely shafted by management. But on the flip side, they interviewed Carmen Electra, who looked great, by the way, but who they didn't interview Luke Longley. And with Luke Longley was a pivotal part of the offense. He was the center for them. He didn't score a whole bunch of points. But when he did get into, he did have an injury and all that, Jordan stated in the media that he couldn't wait for Luke Longley to come back, because he made Jordan's work a lot easier by blocking out guys and making plays for Jordan and giving the passes and all that kind of stuff. So they should have, it would have been a more enriching experience for a non-basketball fan if they brought all of that in. But then I guess you can't. No, they should have had everything. They had 10 episodes, so yeah.
But I reckon some people may not have wanted to be a part of it, because it also depends who wants to speak. For instance, Shaquille O'Neal was like a non-presence and they just kind of throw out his name.
That's actually how I felt about the Jordan kids. The fact that they show up for like 2 minutes and that's it. And I'm thinking, if you are going to interview Michael Jordan's children, if this is supposed to be an in-depth look at the guy, you know, it's a very, very controlled narrative. And I think, thank you, Sean, for the disillusionment. I appreciate it.
Okay. No problem.
But do we all enjoy it? Yes, a thumbs up resoundingly.
100%.
I would recommend it, yes.
Yeah. And I Sean? Watched a 1.5-hour documentary about the Chicago Bulls, which was a lot more accurate in terms of the basketball itself. And they put in a bit of drama with Rodman and all that, because actually Rodman was a far more colorful character than Jordan could ever hope to be. But I feel there are documentaries out there which portray the Bulls more accurately than this documentary. This was simply a point of view, mainly one person. And to make it look less obvious, they just chucked in a bunch of other characters. Oops.
Okay, so just to close off, because we are running out of time, so if someone's watched The Last Dance and they now find themselves intrigued by what was put on screen and they're thinking, okay, you know, I'm ready to go into this 90s Bulls deep dive, what documentary would you recommend people move on to?
So you just have to YouTube The Last Dance. And of course, once your algorithm gets into the, has already warmed up, you'd get a lot of narratives and all the stories tangenting off and what really happened and how some players are absolutely, like the Horace Grant story will go off on its own tangent and how he's extremely annoyed with Michael Jordan. And you'll have the Tony Kukoc story, all these stories which are just spiraling out of control now. The documentary acted as a catalyst, I guess. Otherwise, all these narratives, this might not have cropped up. You actually can get the whole picture of what the Bulls were like, ironically.
All right. So that concludes our conversation about The Last Dance, which I have to say went in a different different direction than what I'd initially anticipated. But I think overall, interesting, I think an interesting place to start and a great quarantine watch. It's just deeply entertaining, if nothing else. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let us know what you think about The Last Dance. Let us know if your YouTube algorithm has warmed up and you've been seeing other points of view. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And of course, if you want to get in touch, see what we have coming up, we are BFM Popcorn on Twitter and Instagram. And you can write to us at movies@bfm.my. You've been listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.